lifetime for me. He made a valley of grace.
All right. Welcome to the Valley of Grace podcast. Helping women create an empowered new chapter of life. We are reclaiming power and identity, breaking unhealthy relationship patterns, and building resilience and flourishing. And I have a guest with me here today, Jennifer Ramirez. And so we're just going to dive right in. And Jennifer's going to start off by telling us her life story.
Awesome. Thank you, Katina. I'm happy to be here.
Yes.
And yeah, let me. Okay. And if I start to ramble, just cut me off because. So just to tell you guys my story. So I was born in Chicago, moved to the suburbs when I was about four or five years old. And then, life went on. And then about when I was 7 years old, I started going through sexual abuse. My dad started sexually abusing me. And then he stopped. Well, he didn't actually stop. But then my sister had asked me if he had done anything to me. And I didn't even answer her. And I think she just saw the look on my face. And she was like, oh, she lost it. Because he had done it to her as well.
Wow.
She just knew. And then there was this whole family ordeal drama. I told my mom, my sister woke up my parents like very, in a frenzy because she was very upset. And then my dad and my sister were out talking outside. And then my mom came into the room and she asked me, is it true? And I just turned around and I looked at her and I nodded yes. And then that was it. She never asked any questions, never brought it up ever again in my life. She just, life went on. She stayed with my dad after knowing this. So that was, I think the fact that she stayed with my dad after everything was a little bit more traumatic than the actual like sexual, sexual abuse. So I went on, life went on. And my parents finally got divorced when we were 14 years old. We were freshmen in high school. And okay. I say we, cause I have a twin sister too. So
thinking you were talking about the older sister that you told. So the twin sister is one you told about what happened.
No, it was my older sister, actually.
Okay.
My twin didn't really know anything that was just completely oblivious to all of it.
Okay.
Finally, we actually left when we were freshmen in high school because we just couldn't stand being around my dad anymore. He was always really angry and like he was an over the road truck driver. So he was never home anyway. But the 2 weeks out of, I think we saw him 2 weekends out of the month. So the 2 weekends out of the month that he was home, he was always screaming at us, yelling, mad, like just always changed the vibes of the household. And it just got to the point where I was like, I can't be around this person anymore. So we went to go live with my older sister because she had a
okay.
at the time. She's 5 years older than us. And finally, us leaving the house was what finally pushed my mom to finally leave him. So then
you guys leaving, that's what made her decide.
Yeah.
How
that's
old
finally,
were you guys at the time?
14 to 15. We didn't go back home till we were 15 years old. So we left the house for a little bit over a year or maybe right under a year, somewhere around that. And then, but we went back home. My mom was not my mom anymore. She was a completely different person.
Really?
My mom had my older sister when she was 15 years old. So I think she kind of reverted back to that teenage girl that she had missed those years of, her whatever college years and teenage years. So she kind of went back. She wanted to party and date. She lost a lot of weight. My mom's very beautiful too. So like she, she started dating a lot and going out to clubs a lot. She was dancing like salsa music. So always at the clubs and stuff like that. And she just was a different person. It wasn't her anymore. So like, then life went on, whatever.
Okay.
Mom wasn't really around anymore. I didn't really have a relationship with my dad until I got a little bit older. I went on. I became pregnant at 21. I moved to Chicago when I was 19 because we lived in the suburbs. Moved to Chicago when I was 19. And then I like just lost. I like just went crazy. I went buck wild because it was so different. I grew up in the suburbs. It was completely different than the city life. And then I started hanging around, all these different people. Like I started dating game bangers. I started doing drugs. I didn't start drinking until I was 21, but the drugs came first. Started, even like selling drugs with my boyfriends too, stuff like that. So I was just going down a really, really dangerous path. I actually had started selling like weed by myself. And then right, maybe a couple months after I started selling that, I got pregnant. And I knew that was a sign from God. Like, chill out. That was his way to calm me down, because I was really going down a dangerous path. I didn't care about any consequences. I just wanted to have fun and party 24/7. That's all I cared about. And then my daughter, like, definitely calmed me down. And her dad was also a gangbanger, didn't have a job, drug dealer. And then when I told him I was pregnant, he thought I was lying, said I was lying. How do I know it's mine? And he took off. He left to Puerto Rico. Yeah. So I had to go through being pregnant by myself. I was in denial for a long time about it. I was like, okay, he's going to come back. He tells me he's going to come back. And everybody's like, Jenny, he's not coming back. And I was like, no, he's going to come back. He says he is. And then finally, when I hit about 8 months, I finally just had like an epiphany, like, okay, this man is not coming back. Like, you're going to have to do this on your own. And it was a super hard pill to swallow. It was very, very sad point in my life. Mm. I had my daughter in the hospital. My mom and my sister were in the room with me, but it was just so different. And I just remember feeling like so sad. I was happy when I finally got her out and pushed her out, and I was crying. Right. It was like, you know, like the physical stuff that comes with being pregnant was really rough on my body. Yes. And I was only 21. And then I remember like the night I brought her home from the hospital, I had like my first panic attack because I freaked out. Like I just had this little tiny person that I'm now in charge of, and I didn't know what the heck I was doing. I'd never obviously been a mother before, and there's no pamphlets or books that you get, you know, you just here, figure it out. And I just really was scared. And, but then after I kind of cried it all out, I was like, all right. Had to buck up and do it. And then after that, just like, you know, I got in the groove of things and you know, started just doing it all on my own. And then her dad came back when she was like 2 months old, and I took him back right away because I wanted my family to be together and work out. And then 2 months after he came back, I was at work one day. Mm-hmm. And I heard, I called him, he didn't answer. So I figured he's sleeping. Huh. Something inside told me, listen to the voicemail. And I never used to listen to the voicemails, but this particular day it was like, listen. So then I listened to the voicemail, and there so happens to be a woman on there saying, hey, it's me. Like being all cute, like, hey baby, it's me. And I was like, oh my God, after everything that this man already put me through, you know, like he had gone through a lot of drama and stuff like that. He was always with other women, and that was fine. Like, and then he left me when I was pregnant, which was traumatic, and it wasn't there when I had her, and I had to do it alone for the first 2 months and all that stuff. And then I was just like, no, that was it. I called him and I was like, you have 15 minutes to get out of my house, or I'm calling the cops and telling them you're an intruder and I don't know who you are. And then he was like, what happened? And of course he was denying it. And then like 10 minutes later, I checked the voicemail. There's nothing there. And I was like, come on, dude. Like, I heard it already. Like, you deleted it clearly. I'm not an idiot, whatever. And then, you know, there was a lot of baby daddy drama after that, a lot of things that happened because he was upset that I didn't want him anymore, because I had always kind of been the one chasing him since I met him, and he finally saw that I wasn't interested anymore. So now I hurt his feelings that I didn't want anything to do with him really. And there's just a lot of stuff. So basically that was around the time where I kind of like hit rock bottom. Maybe a couple of years after that, I also lived in a really bad neighborhood in Chicago because that's all I could afford. There was a drug house across the street, shootings every day. And it was just like really, really bad. And I was also $25,000 in credit card debt. I was in a lot of, I struggled financially like really bad because it was just me trying to like, you know, I was independent on my own. So I was trying to pay the rent, car notes, insurance, diapers, formula, food, and all that stuff. So it was just, it was a lot for me to take on. So it was just very, very stressful time. And that was essentially when I like really hit rock bottom. And I was like, how did I get here? Like, how did my life turn into this? I never wanted this or expected this, but I had kind of realized like everything you've done up to this point has been choices. All the choices you have made, you chose this guy to have a kid with, you chose, you know, or I should say, I didn't know I was going to have a kid, but you chose to have unprotected sex, right?
Okay. I see what you're saying.
Like you chose like these type of people, and even the type of friends that I had were negative people too. I say that I used to hang around broken people that were just as broken as I was. So you're getting advice from people that are just as messed up as you. So you're just holding each other's hands, making terrible decisions together is essentially what I was always surrounding myself with. So I just, I started, going to counseling. I started reading self-help books. I really started like trying to focus on like changing everything that I had done up to that point. And then I started going back to college because I had dropped out. The reason I actually moved to Chicago in the first place was because I got accepted into one of the universities over here, Loyola, which is actually one of the better colleges. And I dropped out because all I wanted to do was party and have fun. So I dropped out of that.
Yeah.
And so I started going back to school, and it really just changed a lot of different things. I got, also the work environment I was in. I was in this work environment for like 7 years with the same people. It was very, very toxic. These people were not very good people. And I didn't really realize until after I stopped working there how toxic the environment was and how much they used to bring me down a lot until I got promoted to a new job. And I started working with what I call normal people, like normal everyday people.
Yes, yes.
These people had they were all college educated, very nice. They went to work just to work, no gossip, no drama. And it was like, oh my God, is this what it's like to like actually be with normal coworkers? You know, and it just honestly, being around these people, a lot of them had their bachelor's, but most of them had their master's degree in accounting. Mm-hmm. So I worked with accountants. So it was so inspiring to me. I was like, wow, these people are so intelligent and I want to be like them. And I want to make the money that they, I was making like $50,000 less than these people. And I was like, I want to be able to do that. So being in that environment actually really changed my perspective on life, and being around those people really just made me want more for myself, like the way they had like strive for more for themselves, you know. That was very life changing for me. So then I started going back to school. I was going part time because I was still working full time, so it took me a while, but I finally got my associate's degree, and then I went on to get my bachelor's degree. And I had started a blog, which is called Jenny Says Blog. From the blog, I was like, oh, I really want to empower women with my story and letting them know like all these things that I had been through in the past, like, you know, all the bad mistakes that I had made. I don't want women to make mistakes. So I want to like share my story with them so that they can see that, you know, even if you make those mistakes, you can still start over. You can still start brand new and make your life whatever it is you want it to be. So I think I mentioned at the time I was 30, I was 100% debt free, completely out of debt. So then I started using that money that I was always using towards the debt. I started learning about how to grow your money, how to invest it. So I started investing in real estate. I became friends with a couple of realtors who gave me a couple of secrets. And so I just started purchasing properties, and people were like, oh my God, Jenny, how are you getting all of this money to do this? And so I would tell them how I did it or whatever. And they're like, oh my God, that's genius. And so, you know, that happened, and that was just really life-changing because I was this broke single mom to like going to, I was still a single mom, but now I was just doing better for myself, you know, like financially, I wasn't struggling anymore.
Sure.
The paycheck to paycheck thing that I had gone through for so many years. And I honestly thought that I was going to be there forever. That's what it felt like. I felt like I was always going to just be stuck. And then from the blog came what I did out of my living room. I just did them. They're called Women Empowerment Events. And I just did it to inspire women. And it was just doing it as a hobby. And then by the third event, we had kind of locked down. I had partnered with this girl, and she had got us a venue that was donated to us. And we had sold out of 150 tickets on Eventbrite. And that was kind of like my light bulb moment. And I was like, I was like, okay, there's a need for this. Women want these type of events. So let me look into like an organization. So that's where And Rise came from. And I created And Rise Nonprofit. So it's the and means your story's not over yet. There's more to tell. And the rise means rising above any adversities that you've faced. So we help women with personal and professional development workshops. We also do weekly support groups for female trauma survivors. So a lot of the women that come to our groups are sexual, domestic, or emotional abuse survivors. And we also offer free counseling for women in Illinois right now as well. And my vision is for And Rise. I have such a big vision for it. Like I want it to be a worldwide organization one day so that we can help women all over the world, not just in the US, because women go through this, you know, struggles all over the place, but especially more underdeveloped countries, you know, they're definitely still mistreated and abused, and nothing really, they don't have any resources or any help, you know? So that is my big vision for And Rise. And then because of And Rise, I started And Flourish, which is my coaching business where I do trauma and narcissistic abuse coaching for women, because I went through a lot of trauma with the past, you know, my dad was also a narcissist too. So that's why I went on to date a narcissist and be with narcissistic men. So I went through a lot of narcissistic abuse and domestic abuse, financial abuse as well. A lot of financial abuse because I dated back then. I didn't really care if a guy had a job or any goals or ambitions. And it was just like, whatever, I just want to have fun. And so I would find these guys that had nothing to offer me, but I had, you know, I always had a good job. I always had, I don't want to say money, but you know, I always had my own place and stuff. So I think they always saw me as like, oh, I could take advantage of this person. She has this and that, you know? So yeah, so those were the type of men I was attracting. And then, yeah, the financial abuse is no joke though. So that's why I help with women and survivors of this type of abuse to kind of be able to move forward and let go of all that emotional pain that they had from whatever abuse or whatever it was that had happened in their past. And I'm very passionate about helping women and just helping them move forward. And I just love what I do. It's very fulfilling. And I'm just, I know that this is what God has called me to do. It's all kind of just led into it. I never expected it. And it's just been honestly fell right into my lap. And I know it's because he's like, here, this is what I want you to do.
Isn't that something how when things are for you, even though, like you said, when you look back, you're thinking, well, I never thought I would be doing this. But then when you look over your life and what happened, all your different experiences and like the wisdom you've gained, you're like, of course I would be doing what it is I'm doing because you understand what I'm saying.
Oh, I totally do. Like, yeah.
You're like shocked, but at the same time, when you think about it, everything, God lined up everything, you know what I'm saying, for you to have, not for it to happen, what I'm saying is like the experiences and the wisdom was implanted in you so that you would be able to do what it is you're doing for your calling. So he will lead to that, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I mean, I know the sexual abuse and all that stuff, like, wasn't fun to go through. It was traumatic, but I know that I went through that. Like now being in the space that I'm in now, I've been on my healing journey for 10 plus years. I've forgiven my parents for, you know, the stuff that has happened and I'm in just such a better place. But now I know I had to go through everything and make all those bad decisions, go through all the heartbreak, go through all the pain and the, you know, I had to go through that to be the person I am today and to help the women, you know, that I'm helping because I lived through it. I know what they're experiencing. And, you know, I, in a weird way, I'm almost thankful for all the things that I've went through. I don't like, you know, I'm like mad at God. I was actually mad at God for a long time. So I was like, how could you have let all this stuff happen to me? I was in victim mode for a long time, but that's what I help my clients with too, is like, getting out of that victim mode because it's not going to get us anywhere. You're just going to be stuck.
Tell me about it. Oh my word. Isn't that the truth? Because even though it's a part of the process, like, you know, analyzing what happened to you, and sometimes you have to go back to your story several times. I know my therapist in the beginning, I remember I would look at her like, what is she talking about? When she said, it's so many levels to this and so many layers. And she said, you're going to be pulling back layers for years.
Like an onion. Yeah.
Yes. And I was thinking, no, I don't think so. Then it's like, I see what she means. Sometimes you have to go back to your story, not to sit in it and wallow in it, but you, as you heal, you're able to look at it from a different perspective than you were before. You understand what I'm saying? So sometimes you'll think that you've totally healed on something, but then God wants to take you to a different, pull in the back, like you said, like an onion, to a different layer of it and seeing like another view that you didn't see before. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. Very true.
But you're right though. When the women, you know, we get stuck in victim mode, even though that's part of the process being in it, but to be stuck in it,
right?
You know, and it's hard because they don't see it. You know what I mean? When you hear, you know, you talk to someone because you know you've been there before. So you talk and you can see that they're in victim mode. And then, you know, other people are trying to like encourage them out, but they want to like stay in.
They want to stay.
Yeah. And like constantly focusing on what happened to them.
Yeah. And I always say it's okay to feel, and it's okay to be mad, and it's okay to be sad, and all the emotions. You got to feel it, because a lot of people try to repress those feelings and then they come back later in life. You can repress it till you're 50 years old. But guess what? When you're 50 years old, then all that stuff you've been repressing is going to come back. So a lot of the women that I help are actually people who have repressed things, and they forgot about all the stuff that has happened, and then it comes back way later in life. And now they're dealing with all this crazy stuff that they had forgot. That, and it's even harder when you do that later on in life. You know, I find that it's way harder for them once they're a little older and they have repressed for so long, and then they're like, oh my God, I feel horrible, all these things came back that I forgot have happened. And, you know, just helping them work through that. But it's okay to feel, it's okay, but don't be stuck there. That's the biggest thing I don't want people to do. Don't stay stuck there. Feel it, but then you got to move on, let it go, you know. And that is something that I help people with too, because a lot of people say, what do you mean just let it go? How do I do that? But, you know, that's things that we work through, and a lot of it comes with forgiveness. Not just forgiveness of the people that have hurt you, but forgiveness of yourself. And I work with most of my clients are women, so women are we're very hard on ourselves. We're more likely to forgive somebody that's, you know, like done something really terrible to us than to forgive ourselves for maybe letting or allowing the abuse, right? Staying too long in the relationship and things like that. And they just, it's really hard for them to forgive themselves. And forgiving ourselves is one of the biggest pieces of healing. You know, that I was a kid, I had a lot of guilt and shame around my sexual abuse. And then once I started going to counseling and stuff, it was like, I didn't ask for that to happen. I was the victim in that situation. So I was able to let go of that guilt and shame once I realized, like, it wasn't my fault. I survived something horrible that had happened that should have never happened. But once I did that, it was so freeing. And like, it just felt like a huge ton of bricks off my shoulders. And then I was like, okay, you know, it's definitely worth it when you really do the work to heal. Then you can kind of live that normal life again and just so worth it. Healing is not easy. I always tell people this. It's not easy. It takes time. You know, things that you think you're over will come back later, maybe. You know, but it's all for a purpose. And once you're kind of like in a better place, you'll be like so thankful to yourself. Like, I'm so glad I did it, because now I'm in this place. I feel better. And now you can be able to share your testimony with other people and help them without even knowing it.
Yes, because you know what better testimony than from someone that has already gone through that drama. You know how some people, you're just saying something, but if you can tell somebody, no, I've been there to the worst of worst, then it's like, oh, and then it helps them to want to even listen more. Like if she's she survived, you know.
You can give people advice all you want, but when you have your own testimony, nobody could take it away from you, because that's your story. That's what you've been through. And nobody could say, no, you haven't. Yes, I have been through that.
That is true. You're right. You give them advice until you blew in the face and they're blue in the face. But when you've experienced something yourself, they can't take that away from you. And that is what's the game changer. I noticed as you were telling your story and you mentioned, I've noticed this is really common among people that have been abused. And I can definitely see why, like you said, a lot of times the person that like necessarily might have abused us, no matter what kind of abuse, whether it's emotional, sexual, physical, financial, you know what I'm saying? Whatever, spiritual abuse. But a lot of times the pain is more so on the person that enabled the abuse, or like just, oh, okay, that happened, okay, and then you go on. You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking it's because you feeling betrayed. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. By the person that enabled it. And I think that's what brings more of the pain there, the betrayal of the person that knew about it but that downplayed it. Mm-hmm. Would you agree that it's harder like that for victims of abuse?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of the women I work with have gone through that too. You know, especially I do help a lot of people who have been through narcissistic abuse or still going through it, which is what they do. They make you feel like you're crazy, or like, oh, you're acting, you know, or your feelings are like you're overreacting or whatever. And then they start to make the person feel like, am I crazy? Is something wrong with me? Because that's what happened with me in my last like relationship. Like anything, if I was ever upset about anything, it always got flipped around on me and how I was this bad person. And then I really started questioning. I was like, is something wrong with me? because this, I can never do anything right to please this person. And it got to the point where I was walking on eggshells in my own home every day. I didn't want to make this man mad because I knew that if we got mad at me, we would fight for hours. Like our fights would last like 7, 8 hours or more. Like we would literally fight till 2, 3, 4 in the morning. He would not stop.
Wow.
And it got to the point where I would be in tears and I'd be like, just please stop. I can't take it anymore. I have to go to work in the morning. Like I can't fight with you any longer. Like I have nothing else to give you, you know, like I'm empty right now. And,
right.
You know, there's just a lot of things like that. And then, I have a story too. This one lady that I know told me that, there was this man who was a narcissist too.
Yes.
And he was always trying to convince his wife's family that she was crazy. And, you know, and then she was like, I'm not crazy. And he's like, yes, she is. She's always talking about the curtains being a different color. And then she started saying like, the curtains are always a different shade of green. And then he's just like, I don't know what you're talking about. They're the same shade of green. These are the same. I don't know what you're talking about. Turns out the man bought a bunch of different green shaded curtains and was changing them every day. And because he was trying to make the woman think she was
crazy. Make her think she was going crazy.
And it really was him changing the curtains. And she thought like, no. And then the family, he's like, see, she said it was a different shade of green today. I told her she was crazy. And that's what narcissists do. They have to have their cheerleaders. Their narcissists are very charming people. They're, the outside world thinks that this perfect person, but inside, you know, closed doors, they're not that same person with you. They treat you very badly. Mm-hmm. And then, but to the outside world, they want to make it seem like they're perfect. So then when you tell the other people that, hey, he's doing this and that, or she's doing this and that, they're like, no, it can't be. He's like the nicest person in the world. He would never do that type of stuff. So they have their cheerleaders.
Right.
And that's what kind of keeps like the cycle going. Cause then it makes you question, okay, well, none of these people believe me. So maybe there is something wrong with me. Maybe they, you know, maybe it is me. And that's exactly what happened to me. I really thought it was something with me and it turned out, no, it was not you. Finally, one day, I think I just have gotten these like epiphany moments.
Mm-hmm.
It was God finally shining like light on me, like, hello, like shaking me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this man is not good for you. And it was finally like, we had a really bad fight and, it had turned physical. And I was guilty of it, but he, like, I hit him and because he was in my face, I have a trigger. You get in my face. Like he was like literally right here.
Right there. Right.
I'm 5 foot even. I'm a short little person. He was 6 feet tall, big, strong guy. And like, he always tried to scare me, always scream at me, always try to intimidate me. So I just, when you get that close to me, I just have this automatic thing. I'm from Chicago. Don't get that close to me. We're going to fight. If you get that means like, we're going to fight when you're doing that. So like it was just automatic. I didn't even mean to hit him, but it was just like, I just hit him. And then, and then of course, now the blame's on me. Oh, you hit me. I can't believe you did that. And how dare you? And you're this and you're that. And that was just the day that I just was so overwhelmed. I was like, get out of my car. He wouldn't get out of my car. He was screaming at me, like hitting my dashboard, just like screaming at the top of his lungs. And then I left. I went to my friend's house. He followed me to her house and made a big scene. And I was so embarrassed. That's like not the type of person I am, like the type to make a scene and drama outside. And I was just like, and then after all that happened, I went to pick up my daughter. Then we went home. I was in the living room. He was in the bedroom. Then he comes out with his hands on his hips and he's like, so what do you have to say for yourself? And I was just like, that was finally where I finally just got the like light bulb. And this man does not respect you. He doesn't care about you. You have to just be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really know at the point that I was done. I just knew I needed a break from him. So I told him, I need you to leave the house for a couple of days, go to your parents' house, you know, maybe a day or two, and we'll talk about it. I just need space right now.
So much I wish I could give back, but I'm not intact to be sharing all of that. You took the price to give me that life, and now it's never gonna fade away. When I see I need more of him, he whispers the sweetest of mercies upon my ears, and I won't go back the way it was again, 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 and now. The Valley of change. I've seen the lights of Valley of Grace, where things have changed. Ooh. Oh, I've seen so much, so much for me. Have you?